4:37, if I draw out the word seven. There we go, 4:37 Central Time on the Mike McFeely Show on KFGO. And since I did not have a program yesterday because of America celebrating labor and the labor movement in this country on Labor Day, we are going to bring in our good friend Clay Jenkins for a weekly chat right now on the program. So let's go to Bismarck, North Dakota, and chat with Mr. Clay Jenkinson. Good afternoon, sir. How was your Labor Day weekend? I trust it all went well for you.
Yes, I did labor through the weekend, but I had a great time and caught up with a lot of work.
Well, so then you really didn't get a break then. You
were took some long walks, slept in, had a glass of wine, read books, but it was that makes it about the same as any other.
Isn't that your usual day? You kind of you roll out about 9 o'clock. You have a couple of cups of coffee. You read a book. You go for a walk. You drink some wine for lunch. Isn't that kind of your normal day, or am I wrong on that?
No, I'm pretty lazy, but my dream is someday to host a 3-hour radio program.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Cheap. Wow. Really cheap.
That's completely accurate, but really cheap.
Yeah, low. But I mean, if you're going to make fun of my life as a reader.
You have every right. And trust me, talk show hosts can be made fun of in many different ways.
I know. I'm trying to take the high road. I'm not calling you a damned liberal.
Okay. I could call that enough. I need to get a little bit serious with you because there is a situation in Syria that the United States is taking a very serious look at, Clay. And it sounds like for all intents and purposes, we have people in this country who want to fire some missiles at the Syrians and they want to teach them a lesson. They want to show that, by God, you can't cross the red line that our president stupidly drew in the sand. What do you see happening here? And do you favor military action by the United States in Syria, Clay?
I do not. I think it's time that the United States step back and stop trying to police the world. Now, if we intervened in every awful regime that's doing horrible and unspeakable things to its people, there would be nothing else that we would do. And I understand why at some points you must intervene in some places, and maybe this is one of them, but I'm weary, and I'm sure you are too, of time after time we dink around with this, we threaten, we try to create a coalition, and eventually we wind up going in and having what we call surgical strikes. And maybe this can be done in a way that will improve the situation, but I don't think that it was the plan of the founding fathers that the United States would become the superpower, one of whose roles would be to police the world. And I think it's an expensive and really wrong-headed hobby that we've gotten into, and we frequently, as in this case, Mike, we don't really know what happened, and we really don't know who the good guys are, and we're pretty sure that the people that we're going to support are not all people that we actually like. You know, that we know who the bad guy is, but who are the good guys?
Well, I'm not sure that the other side are good guys either. I think it might be a case of they're all bad guys, Clay.
Yeah, yeah. Which schnook is the least awful, you know? I just don't think that this is in our interest as a people to pretend that we can know enough. Didn't we learn our lesson in Iraq? Don't we ever learn a lesson that we can't know enough to know?
But then what role, and this is the question that I brought up last week when all this was going hot and heavy after the UN inspectors came, and the United States as well, came to the conclusion that gas was used on the Syrian people. Then what role do we play in terms of morality? If you have a regime that is gassing its own people in a desperate attempt to keep power because it knows that it's going to be quite literally eliminated from the face of the earth if it doesn't do that, then what role do we have as the moral compass of the world to make sure that innocent people aren't slaughtered? Do we have that role? Did we ever have that role? We like to believe we did.
Well, you know, Jefferson used to love Pericles' funeral oration from the ancient world of Athens, and Pericles said, the best role for Athens is to be the most extraordinary society that ever was, the most just, the most prosperous, the happiest, the place where the rule of law is most completely adhered to. If we are the exemplar of the world for what is right about life, that's the best thing we can ever export to the rest of the world. And I do think that we have so many fundamental problems in the United States, Mike, and we are really just in paralysis, that we should stop pretending we're the best and get back to trying to be the best. And that idea is called soft power, is going to be infinitely more persuasive than our missile strikes.
You've traveled a lot throughout the world, Clay.
You've been to Syria. You've been
many places that many of us can only dream of being. Do they being other people in the world, do they see us as we see ourselves? Do they see us as this shining beacon on the hill of morality and democracy? Do they believe what we believe about ourselves? Because I think there's an important distinction there that we can talk all we want about we have the high ground and we are this and we are that. But if people in Syria or Afghanistan or Iran don't see us that way, then are we really that way? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's what I want us to try to get back to. You know, after World War II, we were seen as this amazing nation that had sacrificed its own best interests to help save the world, really. Stalingrad saved the world and Churchill saved the world, but we certainly played a part. And we have been eroding that great reputation ever since, and really greatly in the last 15 or so years, until most of the world is cynical about us and believes that we're just an empire, ruthless and self-interested, that gobbles most of the world's stuff and is righteous about it too. But they still kind of secretly admire us, partly because of our prosperity and our popular culture, and partly because they're caught up even now in the ideals of America. So we have to have a reformation here, Mike, and get back to being America at its best and restore that great thing that we came out of World War II with, which we have been just kind of letting go for really bad reasons ever since.
I get the sense just from talking with my friends and people around the office and people at the Kansas State Bison football game over the weekend, and maybe you get this sense too talking with your colleagues in Bismarck and around Western North Dakota, Clay, but it doesn't matter whether people are a Democrat, a Republican, a rich person, a poor person, a middle-class person. We as a people are weary of war. We are weary of spending the money. We are weary of losing the lives. We are weary of putting ourselves out there and angering people in other parts of the world to make them want to strike back at us for us sticking our nose in their business. We're a very weary nation when it comes to firing missiles at somebody these days.
As well we should be. I mean, we spent trillions on Iraq. Our government lied to us about the reasons for going in. Then we got burned there, and we touched off a horrible sectarian civil war that's not over yet, killed several hundred thousand Iraqis, maimed 30 or so thousand Americans, and killed 7,000 or 8,000 of them. Well, not quite that many, 6,000 or 7,000 of them, and bankrupted this country for what? In what way is Iraq better for all of that nonsense than it was? And so the people of the United States are rightly skeptical to the point of open cynicism of when our government says we should do this for the good of X because we have lost so much ground over this with nothing to gain for it except international contempt for us.
When were you in Syria? And what can you describe what it was like? Was it long enough ago that it's a different place than it is today? I get the sense that the Middle East is always sort of the shifting, no pun intended, shifting sands of you know, 20 years ago this place was great and now it's a hellhole of war. But when were you in Syria and what did you see?
I was there long ago enough that it was stable. You know, Syria has always been a terrorist state. It's the state that does the most damage to Israel. It's adjacent to Israel, the Golan Heights. And Syria was involved in the 67 war and the 73 war. And so I was there back when I was a student at Oxford. It was relatively stable then, and there's a part of me that sort of has a Lawrence of Arabia mania, you know, wanting to go to those sands and see these wild, wild places. But now, I mean, no rational being would go to Syria under the present circumstances. But I was in Egypt a few years ago, too, Mike, and you know, we haven't invaded Egypt, even though Egypt has 90 million people who are suffering grievously. Is it chemical weapons that tipped us? I mean, is that the thing that makes this Syrian incursion necessary?
Well, and it's, you know, there's been many other places where they've had, you know, genocide or attempts at genocide and many human rights violations by the hundreds of thousands or the millions. And you're right, we haven't moved on those places. Part of it is because, well, you know, those places weren't strategically important to us. And so who cares if people are being macheted to death by the hundreds of thousands in Africa, that doesn't matter. But you're right. It must be the gas. It must be the gas that we look at that, or President Obama looks at that, or John Kerry looks at that and says, look, that's the line that we have to step over, or that can't be stepped over.
Well, I know I'm going to get a lot of disagreement from some of your listeners, but I think the UN should take the lead. After World War II, the United Nations was created. I admit it's been a highly imperfect organization, but it's the only one we've got. And it's the organization that tries to see the places that need to be interfered with and put pressure on the world community to do something. But I think the United States should no longer act alone unless the very survival of the United States is at stake. But the idea that we will ride roughshod over the UN and do what we want to do when we want to do it is, I think, ludicrous and really backward thinking. And we should defer to this organization and say, step up, UN, and do your job, and we will be there with you, but we are not going to be the lead.
Well, but there's half of the political aisle in this country that can't do that because they've done everything they can to delegitimize the UN for the last 50 years.
Big mistake. We need the UN.
Yeah, no, I agree. But Clay, hold with me. Need to take a break here. When we return, we'll talk more with Clay Jenkinson, not only about Syria, but also about the white supremacist in Western North Dakota. Left with Clay Jenkinson on this Tuesday edition of the Mike McFeely Show before we get to Sandy Buttweiler, the host of Live at 5, for a preview of what's coming up there. Clay, just a couple of minutes, but I haven't had a chance to talk with you about this guy, Cobb, in Western North Dakota, who's trying to start apparently a white supremacist town in Leith, North Dakota. My thoughts on it are, I don't know if he's doing nothing illegal, if he's not threatening people, if he's not, you know, causing a ruckus, then what can the state of North Dakota or the town of Leith do? He's entitled to his beliefs, as vile as they may be. Do you have any thoughts on this? Have you opined about this?
Well, yeah, I'm thinking about it with you. I agree with you. I mean, so what? He's not the only white supremacist in North Dakota, I dare say. He's probably the only one who's being a loudmouth about it and trying to create a little, you know, cult. But what difference does it make? He's entitled to his wacko opinions until he breaks the law in some awful way, which I doubt that he will. Then we leave him alone. But, you know, I have friends in Slope County, my favorite county in North Dakota, out near Marmouth. In the 2000 census, Mike, it had a population of 792, and it numbered one minority. So I called my friend Patty Perry, the mayor, now deceased, unfortunately, and said, you have a minority in Slope County? She said, yeah, no one's met him, but he must be here. I mean, how will we know if there's a white supremacist at Leith? It's all white people.
It's all white people. Well, there is one African-American, or two, I think, a husband and his wife,
that live there. Reason to be offended, but I'm offended by a lot of things, as are other people. Who cares? He's entitled to his crazy beliefs.
Yeah, and that's my thought, too, is that until he breaks the law. But
and how will he do that? Is he going to have an arsenal? Well, how many ranchers have arsenals? How many people in Fargo have arsenals?
No, I know several, actually, who have arsenals.
I have an arsenal, but it's books, and they are, you know, they're not very useful.
And, well, you read them all day and drink wine.
That's all I do. I'm a book supremacist.
Yeah, we need more of book supremacists in this world. Okay, Clay, great stuff as always. Nice to chat with you.
It's great to catch up with you. I'll see you next week, my friend.
Okay, thanks, Clay. Clay Jenkinson, Bismarck, North Dakota. He's the director of the Dakota Institute, if you're wondering who he is.